This is Marking Out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Follow on Twitter. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Marking out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Spreading like fisting. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. We're marking out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans.
Welcome to Markin' Out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans. This is episode 685. That is right. You can check us out over at markinout.com, on Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and wherever else you may be listening to your podcast. Make sure you give us a 5-star rating, please. Also, buy a t-shirt, prowrestlingtees.com/markinout. You can give us a like over on Facebook. Give us a follow on Instagram, markinout11. Give us a follow on Twitter, at markinout. Check us out on TikTok, on Twitch, and everywhere else over on social media platforms. You can check out me, myself, and I, Dave the Rave, over on all social media platforms at David PTD. PT. That is right. And you can also check out Chris at Chris Sweendog over on Twitter and CMSweeney85 over on Instagram. And follow Brandon at BTTG161 over on all social media platforms. But that being said, let's kick off the show with some... How you doing, Brandon?
I'm still not 100%, still not awesome as always. Again, hopefully I'll get there next week, but I'm not 100% confident on that. Just been drinking a ton of water.
How much water are you drinking?
At least maybe 2 cups a day. I don't know how many. There's more than one cup in these cups, but I don't know. I don't know how many.
Drink, stay hydrated. Drink.
Yeah.
You know?
Outside of that,
keep on drinking the water.
Outside of that, I hit up Grand Lux. I hit up Cheesecake Factory. I tried the new limited edition dirt cake Oreos that they have out. I think they were interesting. They have gummy worm inspired sprinkles and then two creams. One is like an Oreo cookie flavored cream, and then maybe a chocolate pudding flavored cream. So I put out a TikTok video. You can see it there, but I like them. I do wish I had a cup of dirt though, or some dirt cake, whatever you want to call it.
That sounds pretty good.
You ever have that as a kid? Probably, right?
Of course. Yeah. I've made that stuff too. You know, with the gummy worms in it.
At TGI Fridays, every time we'd go there as kids, we'd always get that as dessert.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me want some dirt cake.
That's cool. Nice.
But that's really all my week. How about yourself?
Well, it was St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope everybody had a safe and enjoyable St. Paddy's Day. But in the good old Jewish tradition, we had some corned beef and cabbage, which is it's not tradition. It's just my family. but we had corned beef and cabbage, which was delicious. That's always something that I look forward to on St. Paddy's Day. My mom will make enough to last forever, it seems. And it's always delicious, always very good. And then also in addition to that, let's see. Now I have to actually think, what else did I do besides eat?
By the way, I think it's actually St. Patrick's Day. I don't know if it's rude to say St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day. St. Patrick's Day.
I know that's all I grew up hearing with St. Paddy's Day, but I don't know if that's like disrespectful in 2024 or what.
So you could say St. Paddy's, but I think it's with two T's.
D's?
You're saying it with the T's.
It would be
not
D's, no?
It's, I think, I don't think you're saying it with the D's, because Patty is a woman's name. Like Patty Mayonnaise.
Right, that's tea.
That's tea, yeah. It's one or the other. Like, one is appropriate.
I think it's D. It's D.
T is appropriate or not?
D as in David, are you kidding me?
D is appropriate.
I think that's the one, but you're not going to differentiate when you're saying patty or patty. That's the same word.
I know. It's so hard to differentiate when when speaking, especially for me, where I can barely say correct verbiage at times, where I have to really think about how I'm pronouncing.
Just fast forward to how else was your week?
Thank you for the save. Week was good. We actually, so I recovered from whatever was taking place. One of the people that were on the trip.
You didn't fully recover. People could obviously
not fully,
hear you
but
still.
Somebody on the trip did test positive for the flu.
The flu?
So they had the flu. Somebody on the trip. But they got
How do you test
sick,
positive
like,
for the flu? That's a thing?
Yeah, they got a flu test. But they didn't come back. They didn't have signs of the flu or test for the flu until Tuesday or yesterday even. So about like 7 days, 5 to 7 days after the entire trip. So who knows? But I'm feeling a lot better. It's just a dry cough now. So the weekend was really more spent recovering and just laying low. But yeah, that's really the gist of it, you know? But let's get on to, I feel like I got to go back to Disney Springs now. I'm hooked on Disney Reels now. And I keep on seeing all these food, like different food that I haven't had and I didn't give a shot to. And I feel like I should have. But on the other hand, I also feel like some of it's just too much. Like I don't need Rice Krispies treat covered in caramel and stuff like that. It looks delicious, but do I really need something?
I don't need Rice Krispies treats. I don't need the apples.
Exactly. And then
if I happen to try it, I happen to try it. But that's not one of the things I'm jumping towards.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of the people on Instagrams and stuff, they're sharing a lot of the snacks. And a lot of it just looks high sugar. And I don't even know if I would be able to eat all of what, like, I could probably have
that's
one
like
of those.
One of the big things that I have not done, like I said the other week, I have not been to Disney Springs in, at this point, years for some reason. But the one place there that I really want to go and try, I don't even know if it's an overrated spot or not, but Gideon's Bakehouse always has the longest line. It's a predominantly known for their giant cookies with like tons of stuff all over it, like tons of chocolate chips and everything on the top even. So I really want to try those cookies because they have different menus every
The Gideon's.
So.
Is that the like gothic place?
Yeah.
I
but
saw
for you, I don't even up, know if I would trust eating there though. I don't know if they could guarantee peanut free or something like that.
And that's the thing, like, but I was even looking at the cookies and stuff. I don't know if I'd, like, I wouldn't go out of my way
I really want to try that chocolate chip cookie of theirs. I want to try their coffee cake cookie that they got. I don't know what else I would want to try. Their cake slices look really good, but I don't need to pay $9 a slice for a piece of cake like that.
That too. Like, I don't want to pay $9 for a cookie. You know,
well, it's not $9 a cookie. I believe it's $6 a cookie, but even still.
Yeah, but even still, I mean, it's something that I don't know.
That's like,
but I feel like I would,
at Costco now, they have that giant cookie at the food court that is, I think, is $2.49. Those are fantastic. Those are the ones that they sell, like, I think in a 9-pack or so, those are good. But this one is beyond those. Those are so much the big ones at the food court, so much better.
I haven't had that, but I definitely feel like if I go back, I definitely want to focus more so on the food than the rides. Like we said last week, there's rides I don't have to go on now, and I feel like the food I would probably prioritize a little bit more. And especially now that I have a game plan as to which rides I definitely would go on. Now I don't have to scramble as much.
You didn't do Small World, right?
No. I didn't do Small World.
Classic ride.
That's the thing. I didn't... It's a classic ride, but I didn't feel the need to have to go on it. The classic ride that I wanted to go on was Pirates. You know? Jungle Cruise, I didn't have to go on, but it was more so just a laid-back kind of a thing that, to do in the evening.
You should go towards Christmas time, and then you could get Jingle Cruise.
I don't know. Like, who knows? Maybe I'll end up going back down later on this year for a weekend trip even, you know? But now I understand why people move into those developments, like, around Disney. Like, it totally makes sense now. I get it. I totally
get it. You didn't even ride the train, right?
The monorail?
No, I said train, not monorail. Did you ride a monorail?
I don't know. Both? No. No to both of them.
No. Did you go on both. A boat or not at all? It was just the only boat you would have went on was Jungle Cruise.
We did the boat from French Quarters to Disney Springs.
Yes, to Disney Springs. No. I meant like from Magic Kingdom to somewhere or something like that.
No. Mm-mm. No, we didn't do that. Pretty much the objective.
Monorail. Monorail's the first ride. It's technically the first ride you're supposed to go on.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I feel like priority... I feel like our objectives was the rides more than anything else. So, of course, first was to try to, at 7 a.m., get your Guardians or Tron. And then after that, fill in the blanks with whatever rides you could, depending on the wait times. We didn't rope drop. And I feel like that was better that we didn't rope drop because we were able to last a lot longer through the days. I do think that if we rope dropped the last day, that probably would have been good because it would have given us a little bit more. Actually, I don't even think it would have given us any more time because our friends rope dropped and they went right over to Tower. And we probably, if we rope dropped with them, we would have went to Tower as well. But they were on Tower and they got stuck. So they had to get taken off of Tower and they were given a lightning lane that passed that they could use on Tower or whichever ride that they would want to.
We would have been on that. Rope drop's just too hectic. I don't need to wake up early. And at a hotel, you get like 30 extra minutes. I really, really wish that they would go back to the old way of doing it where it was open later because I miss going to the parks at like midnight.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I feel like, so if we did rope drop with them, we would have been stuck on Tower with them and we ended up meeting up with them like right after that. So we missed nothing in them rope dropping. But I definitely agree with you that it would be better to have the time in the evening because when Varunda and one of my other friends, Dave, when we were in the park at Magic Kingdom until like 10:30, there was like nobody there. It was so much of a reduced crowd compared to previously where we were able to get on Jungle Cruise and Pirates really quickly. If we wanted to, we could have done another ride, but we were getting pretty fried and I woke up at like 3 a.m. That day and to go 3 a.m. till 10:30 at night at Magic Kingdom, it's a lot. So, but I agree with you. I understand why it would be better for them to have the time after in the evening instead of in the morning. But let's move on. So this way, me and Brandon don't start our own Disney podcast, which of course Chris would be a part of, and most likely Rachel as well, because she is a Disney adult fanatic as well. And if you enjoy Disney, feel free to tweet us, message us, follow us on Instagram. But let's get on to it. Let's talk about some sports entertainment. Let's talk about some Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Nitro. That's right. We are not going to kill our throats.
Very bold. I said very bold of you to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
We are not going to... It opened up with Jey Uso. We are
not
killing our throats.
Not on this episode. Not on the last episode. I mean, sorry, folks. It. Not going to happen.
You already not did happening. It. But Jey Uso opened up Monday Night Raw, and something that Michael Cole pointed out, well, kind of touched on, that a lot more people spoke about on Twitter over the weekend, was that WrestleMania 10, we saw Bret Hart versus Owen Hart. And then 15 years after that, we saw Matt and Jeff face off at WrestleMania 25. And then 15 years later, we're going to get Jimmy Uso versus Jey Uso, which I think is pretty cool. I don't know the last time Owen Hart was mentioned on Raw, so I think that was nice to hear. I know kayfabe-wise, they're leaving out both Undertaker and Kane matches as far as brother versus brothers to take place at WrestleMania. But ultimately, Jey called Jimmy out, and he showed up through the crowd with Solo, and Jey said he misses Jimmy, and he begged him to come back to him, and then Jimmy said he never left. He protected him. He did what he did to protect him. And then he also said that the biggest moment of Jey's career is because of him. And Jey disagreed and said his biggest moment of his career is going to be his dream match at WrestleMania 40. So up until this point, this promo was kind of confusing where he's like begging him to come back. But it's also like, nah, I'm looking forward to this. I thought that was kind of like...
I'm looking forward to this a lot. I can't see this ending Jey and Jimmy. You know, I don't know if this is going to be a great match. I can't see another match of Jey and Jimmy taking place at SummerSlam.
No, I don't think so.
Like, I feel like this matchup is going to have to be a payoff of Jimmy and Jey, but then it's confusing as to how it interludes with. Maybe it's the conclusion of Jey with Bloodline. I don't know. I mean, Jey with Bloodline.
Well, Jey ended up punching Jimmy and Solo, but he turned back into a super kick from Jimmy, and the fans knew it was coming. They were chanting for Cody Rhodes, and Cody Rhodes made the save.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adam Pearce was furious with Nick Aldis, and Paul Heyman apologized to Adam Pearce for that. He said that he wasn't authorized... That attack or whatever wasn't authorized. And he said Jimmy and Solo are gone. He made sure they're not in the arena anymore. And then he teased having something to say later on. And then later on, we had Cody Rhodes come out, which was a response to The Rock stuff on Instagram, as well as what he did on SmackDown last week.
He definitely had a lot of choice words on that message, you know?
Yeah, and he brought up how The Rock referred to himself as everyone's favorite heel. And then he named some heels like superstar Billy Graham, Arn Anderson, and others. And he's like, I don't think The Rock is a heel. I think he's something that we can't say on this program, beginning with an A, double crooked letters. And then he brought up Jimmy Dugan, maybe a Hall of Famer, maybe not. Does he have a better chance at this point at Shohei Ohtani? I don't know. Probably not. And how there's no crying in wrestling. But The Rock has been crying behind the scenes this whole time. And Cody said that the TKO board is a bunch of yes people. And he brought up The Rock's mother and said his own mom is not afraid of The Rock. And he said at WrestleMania, he doesn't think The Rock will be the final boss. He'll just be Roman's side chick. And then Paul Heyman showed up and said a few weeks ago, he came out with the NYPD and apologized, and it was stupid for him to do so. And Cody said he didn't ask for an apology from Paul Heyman. And Paul said he had a message from Roman Reigns. And that was that when he goes face to face with Roman Reigns on SmackDown, there will not be another member of the Bloodline there except for him. And Cody should show up alone. So Cody agreed to that. Jey Uso is like, I'll be there if you need me. But meanwhile, as far as we know at that moment on Monday Night Raw, Cody's showing up to SmackDown alone.
Yeah.
And Roman Reigns is just showing up with Paul Heyman. So I'll talk more on that in a bit. We saw DIY pick up the victory over the Creeds to advance to the ladder match at WrestleMania. I really wish both teams could have advanced.
Yeah, because and I got to say that the Creeds have really impressed me. I know that you've been a fan of them for a long time. For me, I needed to be won over by them. And since their upbringing onto the main roster, I've been able to actually see a lot more of their matches.
Except that new theme song is trash.
Yeah, minus this theme song.
Garbage.
But I'm definitely impressed by everything that they've been doing. And I think that I think they have a solid tag team. I love their maneuvers and everything.
Yeah, that suplex pin that Brutus did when he pinned both members of DIY at the same time with it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and even then, Julius, I'm becoming a big fan of with that the suplex, the stalling suplex starting from the ground, making his way up into a stance position. That's just so impressive.
And I like the ankle lock that he did to Ciampa into the powerbomb to Johnny Gargano and then back into that ankle lock. I thought that was nice. But that whole sequence at the end with the pin reversal of the Doomsday Brutus and then everything else that led to Ciampa getting the victory, I just thought that was really well done.
Yeah.
We saw The Way pick up the victory over Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Candice LeRae was definitely way more aggressive in this match. And we saw Katana Chance land weird and sold a hurt knee. And Candice tagged herself in after the referee had already backed up Indy Hartwell. Candice tagged herself in, went right over there and took out Katana Chance. And Indy Hartwell, she looked confused, she looked shocked, maybe disgusted at the same time. And as much as I wish this match was longer, it makes complete sense that it was that length and what they did in it made sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely, it made complete sense to me. excuse me. It definitely made sense to me. And the way I feel had to get this victory, especially everything that took place last week. So it all makes sense. For me.
Earlier in the night, though, we saw the Judgment Day with Andrade, where Rhea Ripley said that they don't just extend invitations to anyone. And if he continues to impress them, they could potentially offer an invitation to him. And they said that they'll be watching his match next week. Meanwhile, Damian Priest was annoyed about JD McDonagh letting Ricochet win that match. And then Rhea Ripley said Dominic will make things right by beating Ricochet, which Dominic seemed he was caught off guard a bit. So before we talk about that match, I don't want to see Andrade in the Judgment Day, and I think that'll be his first big feud on the main roster back in WWE.
I 100% agree with you. I do not. Andrade should be a singles player right now.
Yeah, I think it makes sense that if they're kind of courting him, but not at the same time courting him to join the Judgment Day. It seems like that it only would make sense for that to be his first feud.
Yeah, I just don't want to see. He has to be independent. He has to be solo from everybody. I think that Andrade has a lot to prove as well, coming in from AEW, but also coming in.
I don't think he's got much to prove. He's already, to me, proven himself.
I think he has a lot to prove within the WWE now, where can he get to the level that he was at previously, and can he get bigger than where he was at previously? So that's what I mean with something to prove.
Right.
But next up, you had Ricochet pick up the victory over Dominic. Another very impressive match. Dominic, hands down. I mean, the guy went from totally green to where he is now. And I think that the comparisons are so difficult and incredible. If you told me that this is where Dominic was going to be.
It took him 20 years. What do you mean?
Huh?
It took him 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, but very commendable. But this match was awesome. I like the combination that they both had.
Yeah, and JD McDonagh got involved a few times, but Ricochet ultimately was able to fully recover to get that victory. But after the match, JD McDonagh tried to attack Ricochet. Ricochet gets out of the way. He backflipped off of JD's face to leave the ring. I thought that was pretty cool. And it almost seems like they're setting up a WrestleMania match with JD McDonagh and Dominic versus Ricochet. And maybe we'll see Andrade fill that spot. But it also kind of seems like we could see Pat McAfee in that role. It almost seems like he's been kind of feuding with the Judgment Day, but not, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I could understand that.
So if it's not going to be Ricochet and Andrade versus the Judgment Day at WrestleMania, I think it could be Pat McAfee there.
Yeah.
We saw Sami Zayn confront Chad Gable, and Chad Gable was annoyed and said that it meant more to him to have won last week than it would to Sami. And Sammy was like, you don't get to tell me that. And then Chad Gable was like, I just know that you can't beat Gunther. I'm disappointed they didn't bring up the fact that his damn shoulders were up.
Yeah, it makes me, I mean, with them not bringing that up, I feel like it's a dead topic now.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because you could definitely make that into a thing. And I mean,
could have very much so been a triple threat. But we had a contract signing for that Intercontinental Championship match with Sami Zayn and Gunther. And Gunther said that this is the most prestigious contract signing in the history of the Intercontinental Championship. And Sami's dressed like a bum. And then he reiterated what Chad Gable said about Sami Zayn not being able to beat him. And how Sami knows he can't beat him. So it's still very unfortunate that Gable's not inserted into that because they're now bringing him up in the quote unquote most prestigious contract signing in the history of the title.
Nah.
But I liked the shot that led us into the backstage after this segment.
Yeah, this was really cool.
It followed Sami Zayn up the ramp and through the backstage area to DIY and The Awesome Truth.
Yeah, this is something, though, the video clip of just a running segment, I think it's something that's totally not used in WWE, and I thought it was a great use.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool, and Sammy confronted Chad Gable and asked him why he can't beat Gunther or whatever, and Gable said that Gunther's on a different level. And he can't wait for a window of opportunity to appear. And Sami Zayn's not getting that. He needs to change his mentality if he's going to be the person who can dethrone Gunther. So.
Yeah.
But after that, we saw the Awesome Truth pick up the victory over Inda Sheer to get into that ladder match at WrestleMania 40. I'm glad that Inda Sheer. I mean, they look powerful, at least in this.
Yeah, they look powerful, but you know my take. I'm a mark for Inda Sheer. I wanted Inda Sheer to win. I think that they would have been really solid in there, but it makes 100% sense why it would be Awesome Truth being the winners.
Yeah, I mean, I think Awesome Truth will be the team to win at least one of the titles at WrestleMania. But yeah. In this match, for most of the match, Inda Sheer looked powerful. The ending saw R-Truth getting knocked down onto an already knocked out Veer, and then he got the win off of that. So it works for Awesome Truth. Does it really work for Inda Sheer? I don't know. But after that, we were supposed to hear from Drew McIntyre. Seth Rollins interrupted the entrance. And Seth said that he's a spotlight junkie. And McIntyre said that the only thing funny is when he takes the only thing that will be funny is that when he takes the title from Seth Rollins. And then Seth ran down what he'll be doing at WrestleMania. And Drew McIntyre said he'll be the one to carry Seth Rollins to the ring if he needs to on Sunday and take the title that he's earned after maybe Seth Rollins doesn't even make it out of the match against Roman Reigns and The Rock. And then Seth Rollins called Drew McIntyre a spotlight junkie. He's like, you're just like me. You're also a spotlight junkie. And Seth said that at WrestleMania, Drew McIntyre will find out that he's not as good as he thinks he is. I really hope McIntyre ends up taking that title from Seth. Even if it's Damian Priest cashing in right away or something like that. And yeah. McIntyre loses that title.
I agree. I think that it would be fitting for Drew McIntyre to win the championship. Excuse me. I love the promos that he's been doing. Even still, he's doing so many great promos on TikTok. And just to bring it up in the same topic with CM Punk, it's inevitable that him and CM Punk will feud when Punk returns. Punk's been putting videos up of him exercising without his arm brace on now.
There's also the fact that
he's trying to make a recovery.
There, he could also factor into the match where he costs Drew McIntyre the title. Because CM Punk, they aired a promo. You can't spell Philly without Phil.
You know, you can have maybe.
He's going to be on Monday Night Raw next week. That's in Chicago. I assume they're going to announce he's hosting WrestleMania next week.
That's a good idea.
What's going to happen.
Something that I could see happen is maybe CM Punk, after the match, CM Punk does go through the crowd and hit Drew McIntyre with a go to sleep. And then
Damian Priest.
And then you have Damian Priest cash in and defeat Drew McIntyre. Because if you remember, Drew McIntyre also cost Damian Priest his championship cash in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could go in that direction without CM Punk's involvement too, where you have Damian Priest cash in on Drew McIntyre and beat him cleanly without CM Punk's help, and then you have CM Punk come back and say and taunt Drew McIntyre about how he lost his championship to Damian Priest, and now you still have the match of McIntyre versus Punk without Priest in there, but then you still have the connection of McIntyre with Priest at some point.
Yeah.
So, but next up you had New Day pick up the victory over Alpha Academy to advance in the ladder match. I think that no matter what, New Day was inevitable to be the winners of this.
And Alpha Academy controlled most of this match. So it was nice to see Akira Tozawa booked like that again.
I mean, it would be interesting to see imagine if New Day is about to win the ladder match, and then Big E returns to help them, but actually turns on them?
I don't think that'll happen at all. I think that would be so stupid.
Me neither. But he could help them win.
I think there's potential for a surprise team to be involved, perhaps, but...
Hardy Boys again?
I don't know. I mean, people are throwing out... I mean, Bubba Ray put his name in the hat. People are throwing out Motor City Machine Guns, which would blow my mind.
Motor City Machine Guns?
Yeah, apparently their contracts are up.
I mean, I would say for Philly, I would go with Dudley Boys.
Yeah, but again, I don't know if Devon's even in ring shape. I don't think he was the last time we heard from him.
I feel like for a ladder match, you don't really necessarily need ring
shape,
though, especially with
so many people.
What do you mean,
a ladder match? I feel like you need to be even more so in ring shape.
But, I mean, you have enough people in there to protect you, though.
Oh, well, I mean, here you have beyond enough people, but I also feel like you still have to be in shape to get in there. And like, I don't think I would be able to do a ladder match. I think I would be able to get up on the ring.
Well, don't sell yourself short. I mean,
I think I could do a match where I got up on
the ring apron. Rocky Johnson was willing to give it a shot.
No, I think I can get a hot tag and do like a quick punch where I hurt my own fist and get knocked out.
Just
I don't
be
think
like,
I can
I'm
do
out.
A ladder match. But the main event of Monday Night Raw saw Becky Lynch pick up the victory over Nia Jax in a last woman standing match. We saw Liv Morgan confront Becky Lynch beforehand and said, Nia Jax, go ahead. She's all yours, basically. Just make sure you kick her ass. And I definitely wanted more from this match. And I felt like it didn't really pick up until that like final 5 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Like they were still doing some cool spots, but it just, it for me, it didn't get there. It might have been more than 5 minutes, but I think the final 5 or so minutes of this was super hot.
Yeah, the final minutes was intense, especially with that leg drop through the table.
I mean, you had Nia Jax put Becky Lynch through a table with the before that. Then she hit the Annihilator. And then Becky Lynch put Nia Jax through the table off the apron with the Manhandle Slam. And that's when Nia stumbled over to the announce table and Becky climbed that ladder and hit that leg drop to pick up the victory.
And it was such a clean leg drop, too.
Yeah. Shades of Evolution, kind of, between her and Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
But then Rhea Ripley showed up to stare her down. They went face-to-face to close Monday Night Raw, and I just really hope she retains at WrestleMania.
I agree with you.
Moving over to NXT, we saw Roxanne Perez pick up the victory over Tatum Paxley, which started before the bell even rang. And I thought it was a good match for what they gave us. It was a rather short match, but
yeah,
I like
short, predictable match.
Yeah, but I like that Roxanne Perez does that pop rocks into the crossface just to deal more damage because she's a heel now.
Yeah.
And then Roxanne Perez told Ava to give her the title. And Lyra Valkyria showed up, brawled with one arm. Storyline-wise, that could be a big mistake, but Tatum Paxley tried to stop it, and she ended up getting knocked down. And Roxanne Perez worked on Lyra's bad arm. But Lyra backstage told Ava to make the match for Stand and Deliver for the championship, and Ava agreed, so we have Roxanne Perez versus Lyra Valkyria for that championship. And I feel like it's very much so Roxanne Perez championship to take.
Yeah, it's definitely seems that way. It seems inevitable to me that that's exactly what's going to happen. I don't know if I want Roxanne Perez as champion, to be honest.
I don't know. It would be nice to see Lyra Valkyria retain. Yeah, but, I mean, she technically, she never lost that title.
That is something that
she very much so has that claim to.
Yeah.
And it was this event last year that they everything got taken from her.
Yeah.
We saw Josh Briggs interrupt commentary, and then he spoke about Oba Femi and Brooks Jensen. And said he was pissed off about Oba doing what he did last week with a smile on his face to Brooks. And he called him out. And Oba showed up and he's like, I like the idea of pushing people to their limits. And then Josh Briggs challenged Oba Femi to put the title on the line. And then Dijak showed up. And he's like, I'm here. You can leave. I had next. This is my title shot. And then Josh Briggs pushed Dijak into Oba Femi. The three of them almost brawled or did brawl, but it was broken up. So it feels like a triple threat at Stand and Deliver.
That's what it seems like to me.
Or maybe a fatal four-way because we had Sean Spears watching this segment. And he spoke about egos and then really creepy under the table or whatever. Joe Gacy was watching him watch it. So maybe it's a fatal five-way. I don't know. I don't know what it'll turn out to be.
Could be. I mean, you have to equate. You have to get Joe Gacy in there somehow.
I mean, maybe, maybe not. But we'll see what Sean Spears is doing come Stand and Deliver. But later on, we saw Fallon Henley go to check on Brooks. And he told her to forget about him. He's like, you and Briggs are doing your own thing. You guys are good. I need time or whatever, basically. And then Kalani Jordan showed up, super pissed off at Kiana James and Izzy Dame from last week. And Fallon's like, well, how can I help? And that eventually later on turned into a brawl between the four of them.
Yeah.
After that, Nathan Fraser and Axiom picked up the victory over No Quarter Catch Crew to advance to that triple threat. It was Charlie Dempsey and Miles Bourne on this team, which I feel I'm like so iffy where because later on in the night we had that the Heritage Cup on the line. Uh-huh. It was Charlie Dempsey who won the cup, but they announced that all four of them will defend it. But I don't know if that makes all four of them the Heritage champion. So I wasn't super for Charlie Dempsey being the one in this tag team match, especially if he was going to be the one losing.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
But the match itself was like super fast paced at times, which I wasn't expecting, because when it was fast paced, it would like come out of nowhere. And we saw Axiom hit that Spanish fly. Nathan Fraser hit that Phoenix Splash. And then Axiom stopped Charlie Dempsey from breaking up the pin with that golden rat. What word is it? Golden ration? Yeah.
Golden ration.
I couldn't think of what the move was called for a second. And I don't know. I didn't think that No Quarter Catch Crew was going to lose.
Yeah.
So, is it Golden Ratio? I think it's the Golden Ratio.
I don't know. I think Axiom and Fraser, though, I feel like they've been developing themselves as a tag team for a long time. I feel like they even, you could put them in there as future champions.
They're not
going to
win the match regardless, though. Yeah, I mean, maybe it works in favor of Charlie Dempsey and Miles Bourne not being in that, because they're definitely going to lose.
I can see that.
Also, it is Golden Ratio, just to confirm. Yeah. And then we saw the Alpha Academy interrupt an interview with the Wolf Dogs, and they said that they want in with Stand and Deliver. Alpha Academy being Otis and Tozawa. And they were like, we want to earn it by beating the champions next week. Bron Breakker accepted. So if they win, they'll be added to the match at Stand and Deliver. I guess they get to bypass the triple threat. They automatically...
Which I don't think they should be able to.
Well, I mean, they're getting the opportunity. They said they will win our opportunity by beating the champions. You're not going to redo a tournament.
True.
After that, we saw a video from WWE Anonymous Air where they showed Robert Stone yelling at Von Wagner for embarrassing him last week by carrying him out like a child. And Von Wagner's like, what did you want me to do? Leave you there? Like, come on. So I don't know what's going to happen between the two of them, if that'll like sour their relationship or I don't know. I can't fathom a guess there.
I think I think it's definitely soured already.
I'm not 100% on that.
Why?
I just don't believe that it's fully soured. I feel like that's something that they could work through.
Yeah. That's true.
After that, we saw Sol Ruka pick up the victory over Brinley Reese, which I thought was interesting to have Reese face off against Ruka since they're both faces. But Brinley is somebody who's okay with losing, as she finds it to be a lesson, I guess, to she could learn from her losses. So I don't mind her in that. But
it's good to see Sol Ruka back.
Yeah, it was a good return match from Sol Ruka. Blair Davenport showed up afterwards and knocked her out. So I'm happy to see Sol Ruka back. Obviously, they're going to have a match coming up. I don't know if it's next week or if it'll end up being at Stand and Deliver. I'm not 100% sure about that. It did, however, come out this week that there are call names in the files of WWE 2K24 for Sol Ruka and other people that are shown but aren't shown, like J&J Security have call names, as does Great Khali. So it sucks that they didn't make the final cut of the game. I don't know why. Especially because the J&J security models are Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury in the showcase. Yeah. I don't know why they're not them. Or playable. So that was unfortunate. It would have been really cool to have Sol Ruka's moveset in 2K24.
Yeah, especially. I mean, I I feel like her finisher is going to be inevitably added into it if it's not there
already. I don't know. I mean, unless they... I don't know. I don't know where they would add it.
Yeah. But next up, you had Gigi Dolin and Ren Sinclair.
Yeah, they spoke about the DQ from last week with Ariana Grace. And then Ariana Grace showed up to gloat, but said that she's looking forward to the makeover that Gigi Dolin will have. That was the stipulation on their match last week. So we'll eventually see Gigi Dolin made over as a pageant queen, I guess. Like Ariana Grace. Yeah. Which I feel like it's kind of similar to what we saw with Fallon Henley and Tiffany Stratton. And we like just saw it. Where Stratton had to work on the farm or whatever. So
yeah.
After that,
I totally agree with you. I definitely understand what you mean with that, and I can definitely see that they already did that.
We saw the family. Tony said that he respects Ilya Dragunov, but Tony's shown over the past few weeks that he'll be the one to break Ilya. He'll break the unbreakable. And then Ilya Dragunov interrupted via video, and Tony told him he has no control, and he spoke with Ava, who made a match for next week where it's going to be Ilya Dragunov versus Stax. And Tony questioned what shape he'll be in come Stand and Deliver. Basically threatening him, like, maybe you won't make it. Maybe you won't be in top-notch shape.
Yeah, maybe he's just not going to get there.
Which is like the complete opposite of what Trick Williams was doing. He was like going out of his way to make sure Ilya Dragunov was good enough.
Yeah.
After that, we saw Drew Gulak pick up the victory over Riley Osborne to retain the Heritage Cup. We saw Thea Hale apologize to Riley beforehand for not being herself on their date. As far as the match goes, I thought round one was pretty even, but Riley Osborne hit that shooting star press and got the first fall. We saw Drew Gulak tie it up in round two and then took a cheap shot. As soon as he won that match, it was broken up, boom, knocked him down. And then we saw JC Jane and Jasmine Nick show up during a commercial break, and that ended up costing Riley the match because Thea chased JC into the ring. And when the referee was distracted with him, Jasmine grabbed Riley's leg and boom. There went the match for him.
Yeah, that cost everything right
and
there.
And Thea Hale was pissed off at what Jasmine did. And Ava said she'll have her first match next week against Thea Hale. And she also spoke to Duke Hudson. She's like, well, you'll be in action next week as well. And if you are successful, you could find yourself in that North American title picture. So, again, I mean, we are seeing a ladder match at WrestleMania. Maybe we're just going to see one big ladder match for the North American Championship at Stand and Deliver.
It would be a huge selling point.
Because we'll see.
To include that?
Well, I don't know. Because we'll see. He'll be facing Josh Briggs. And Sean Spears is facing Dijak, so I guess maybe not 100%. I don't know. I feel like you have to include Dijak. You have to include Spears. I feel like at this point you have to include Josh Briggs. Duke Hudson's been just randomly put into this, but I'm fine if he gets added to that as well.
I mean, I'm fine with Briggs being added to it, but
not Briggs.
Next up, you had the main event of the evening. Trick Williams picked up the victory over Noam Dar.
No, you completely missed the OC.
Oh, the OC picked up the victory over Hank and Tank to advance into the triple threat matchup. Totally skipped over the OC. But, the OC, I mean, since they've came into NXT, they've just been going through their entire tag team division.
Yeah,
so.
I was surprised to see Hank and Tank get as much in as they did, but we're going to see the OC versus Axiom and Fraser versus the LWO to move on to Stand and Deliver, so I think it's pretty safe to say we're going to see Alpha Academy beat the Wolf Dogs, And we're going to see Wolf Dogs, Alpha Academy, and the OC at Stand and Deliver with the OC walking out as champions. Yeah. We already have Bron Breakker up on the main roster, just waiting to be, I guess, unleashed. No pun intended.
True.
So I do think we could see the OC walk out as champions. Maybe we will see Tama Tonga. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
I mean, that's very possible to see Tama Tonga show up.
Yeah.
And expand the OC even further.
Yeah. Especially AJ Styles is kind of like distant. I think, I don't know if they said he left or what. I forget what they said. But we'll see.
Yeah, I forgot what they how they
worded it.
Yeah.
But as you already said, Trick Williams in the main event picked up the victory over Noam Dar. I thought it was a good match. But later in the match, we saw Oro Mensah get involved. He ends up getting rocked. Lash Legend got up, tried to slap Trick Williams, but he caught it. And then Noam Dar used that distraction to almost get the victory there. Trick Williams comes back from that. And then during the match, Carmelo's security guard ends up knocking on the door backstage. They show a video and he's like, it's time. So Trick gets the victory. Carmelo gets called out by Trick afterwards. And his security end up surrounding the ring. One of them ended up being Carmelo Hayes, who jumped Trick Williams, and they all held him for Carmelo to do that. There has to be some sort of stipulation in this match.
I agree. I think that there is going to be a stipulation, but maybe we just won't find out what the stipulation is right now.
I mean, we have 2 weeks.
True.
But that's NXT. Moving over to SmackDown. Santos Escobar picked up the victory over Rey Mysterio. Both groups were banned from ringside. I think the match was a bit iffy at times because Rey Mysterio may have tweaked his knee early on, but I don't think it took away from the actual overall match. I liked that super kick that stopped the 619 from Santos Escobar. That seated senton that Rey Mysterio did off the commentary table over the barricade I thought was crazy. But in the end, Dominic Mysterio showed up in a Rey Mysterio mask. He got involved and the distraction led to Santos Escobar hitting his own 619. And then a Phantom Driver to pick up the victory there. After that, we saw A-Town Down Under pick up the victory over the OC to advance in that tournament. Mia Yim got involved behind the referee's back, so I'm not really a fan of that. But Carl Anderson was, I think, the MVP of this match. Big time. Despite losing. And Austin Theory in the end got his feet on the ropes to pin Gallows. And Grayson Waller held them down to get extra leverage there. Earlier in the night, we saw Bayley backstage where she thanked Naomi for helping her last week. Bianca Belair interrupted and was super upset because for the past 2 years, everything that Bayley is having done to her, she did to everyone else, especially to Bianca Belair. So Belair really doesn't have time for that, but they got into a shouting match. Naomi pulled Belair off to the side to talk. And Naomi basically said she can't do anything about the past. She can only focus on the present. And with Bianca Belair, it's very reminiscent, similar to Drew McIntyre and Jey Uso. And how he's not over the bloodline. And they all have rightfully so feelings towards that. That was a terrible way of saying that, but I think it makes sense, kind of. After that, Io picked up the victory over Naomi. The camera cut backstage to Io beating the hell out of Bayley before the match when we're waiting for Io to come out. And I thought they had good back and forth in this match. Io controlled the beginning. Naomi had a comeback in the middle. I like that superplex from Naomi with the float over pin. But Damage Control eventually made their way out and distracted Naomi, and that led to the end. And they continued the attack afterwards, including some missed to Naomi from Asuka. Bianca Belair ran down and at first made the save. Had she not gone for that KOD, she would have been in the clear. But damage control took over. Naomi got on top of Bianca Belair to try and protect her. The fans wanted for Bayley, but she didn't show up. She was taken out by Io before the match. And then later on, Tiffany Stratton made fun of them. We saw a video package air for Jade Cargill after this, where she's officially coming to SmackDown, and she'll make her first appearance as an official SmackDown superstar next week. So I feel like she will tie into that match at WrestleMania. Damage Control versus Naomi, Jade Cargill, and Bianca Belair. They had a gem of a segment backstage with Kevin Owens and Pretty Deadly, where it led to them setting up a tag team match for next week with Randy Orton. I thought all of that was hilarious. And then Kevin Owens ended up punching both of them like he did to A-Town Down Under, I guess in that same arena a few months ago at that point. Really funny segment, though. And then they had AJ Styles. They were documenting him for WrestleMania. And it was interrupted by LA Knight at AJ Styles' house. Police showed up, they brawled, and they arrested LA Knight. AJ Styles kept going at first. I don't know how he wasn't also arrested, but I guess we'll see something with them next week. And then we saw the Street Profits pick up the victory over AOP to advance in that tournament, where I thought this was a good match. AOP caught Montez Ford off that dive to the outside, powerbombed him right into Dawkins. I thought that was cool. But Montez Ford ends up getting a quick inside cradle to pick up the victory. And I think next week we'll see the Street Profits lose to, I think, A-Town Down Under due to Authors of Pain. And I think that'll lead to the setup for the Final Testament versus Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits for WrestleMania. And to close SmackDown, we saw Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes stand face-to-face in the ring. The fans were absolutely over the moon that Cody Rhodes was there. But Roman Reigns called Cody Rhodes stupid for showing up alone. And he brought up how Seth stabbed him in the back and alluded to him most likely doing it to Cody as well. And Cody asked him if he remembers who were the first people to beat the Shield. That was Goldust and Cody. And he threw out the trust thing back into Roman's face, questioning if he could trust The Rock even, and question who's the real number one in the bloodline. Is it the tribal chief? Is it the final boss? And I thought this was good back and forth between the two teams, or not two teams, two people. And in the end, Roman Reigns refused to shake Cody's hand, and he left the ring, snapped his finger, and out from the crowd came Solo. Out from the crowd came Jimmy. And then they lined up with Roman, and Cody had a smile on his face. He took his jacket off. He's ready to fight. And then out from the crowd comes Jay and Seth Rollins. So I thought that was a really cool ending to SmackDown. And I will be taking a quick little break right now, and I'll be right back here on Marking Out.
This is Matt Hardy, the man who is stronger than death, and you are currently listening to Marking Out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Marking Out episode 685. Moving back to Rampage from last week, we had the Best Friends pick up the victory over the Dark Order. I thought the match was fine, but this seemed like an obvious Orange Cassidy victory here. After that, we had Toni Storm and Mariah May pick up the victory over Kayla Sparks and LMK. And like I said last week, I feel like Mariah May should be well beyond this point in her opponents. I just feel like they don't have anything clearly for her. They just have her dressed as Toni Storm. They have her using Toni Storm's moveset. Yeah, I mean, you had Deonna Purrazzo come out afterwards and introduced her partner for Dynamite, which will be Thunder Rosa. So it kind of seems like Thunder Rosa's push is not fully there, but I'll talk more on that come Dynamite. We had Takeshita pick up the victory over Commander. I really liked when Commander pulled the top rope or one of the ropes because he thought Takeshita would fall over to the outside. And Takeshita rocked him with a drop kick. I don't know if I've ever seen somebody reverse that spot before. I just thought it was pretty cool. I wish the match was a bit shorter, but I think Takeshita definitely needed this victory after that loss to Will Ospreay at Revolution. We saw a Serena Deeb vignette. It's really just the same thing over and over again at this point. We saw her make her big return in January. She had a match at the beginning of February, the end of February. All the while, she's been cutting the same exact promo, and we haven't seen anything really different. She's here to put the wrestling back in All Elite Wrestling, but she's hardly wrestling. And then we saw the main event be the Kingdom, picking up the victory over Top Flight in Action Andretti. Chris Jericho at one point during this match pointed out that they did a lion salt in this, which is something he pointed out when Commander did it. So I feel like that should be something to look at, so you don't have these things take place more than once in a night. And nothing to me in this match felt fresh. And we've never seen them wrestle before. I think Top Flight needs a change. The past few weeks, it's been a feud with Private Party, and now it's nothing. Is that feud over? On AEW Collision, we saw Bryan Danielson pick up the victory over Shibata. I thought the match was fine. I enjoyed most of it. This match, I also could have done with if it was a little shorter. I think if I was there live, I would have enjoyed it more, but the referee took me out of this big time. Because it seemed like he was in their way a few times. And he's selling the moves as if he's getting the move done to him. Like the spot that was all over Twitter when they were both sat down to do the chop for chop thing. Or slap for slap. It got a lot of hate for the spot itself. Which I do feel the spot to me wasn't naturally done. But I don't mind it. The goddamn referee is selling slaps as if he's getting slapped. It's just goofy. After that, Daniel Garcia picked up the victory over Lee Moriarty. I think commentary spoke about Daniel Garcia working his way back up to the TNT Championship again. And I don't know how accurate that will turn out to be, but it seems, I don't want to move ahead to Dynamite or anything, but it seems like we can potentially see that. This was one of those matches that seemed like anything you can do, I can do better sort of things. Which I did not mind. Shane Taylor got involved behind the referee's back. I was surprised that Matt Menard didn't get off commentary to pick a fight with Shane Taylor. That was the most surprising thing from that segment. After that, Pac picked up the victory over Aaron Solo. I feel like this match was way too long. Aaron Solo's been off television for 7 months and it's not like this was his big return match, like Pac. But the bigger part afterwards, Pac cut a promo on Tony Khan again. And he said he wants trouble and will find it if Tony doesn't deliver him some. We saw Claudio pick up the victory over Lance Archer via disqualification. I thought this was a good match. I didn't mind the DQ ending. But the Righteous showed up and beat Claudio down. Bryan Danielson tried to make the save, but they shut him down. And then Shibata ran out with a chair to run them off. And on Rampage, the Righteous had a vignette. I was hoping it would lead to them being pushed because I don't know if they've recovered from losing to MJF back in October. There was some sort of box in the vignette, which I hope doesn't turn into a Rowan situation, but there was no box on Collision. They were not mentioned again on Dynamite or Rampage again for this week. So who knows what that will turn into. We saw Kyle O'Reilly make his big return to the ring, picking up the victory over Brian Keith. And it's so great to see Kyle O'Reilly back. His last match was almost 2 years ago, which is just crazy to think about. But I wonder what this will lead to with him. I feel like there's only one outcome, because the Undisputed Kingdom came out to celebrate his victory. But on Dynamite the other week, he said he wants to do this alone. So I feel like the only outcome for this is him taking that title from Roderick Strong. And I'm perfectly fine with that. Earlier in the night, we saw Julia Hart pick up the victory over Trisha Dora to retain the championship, but also it was house rules where it was for the right to be ringside during the main event. And I thought this was a decent match. I do think Julia can learn a lot more, but I enjoy how much she's grown since she's debuted. And then we see the main event, which really, really surprised me. The Infantry picked up the victory over House of Black to advance in the tag team title tournament. And I guess that's why they got a video package the other week. But Mark Briscoe ended up distracting the House of Black, and that's what led to the finish. I was shocked. And it furthers the feud that they have with Mark Briscoe. I have to assume that the Infantry is not making it past FTR, but given how surprised this was, maybe they will. I just don't think that's going to happen. And then the show closed with Edge, where the main thing was that he showed off a 2x4 with spikes all over the top or the bottom, depending on if you're a sick freak and you're going to hold it from the spikes. I don't know who would do that, though, but you never know. And he said he got the idea from people who he spoke to. And he mentioned Janice and he mentioned Barbie. So I have to assume he spoke to Abyss and Mick Foley. But this segment for me was very oddly placed. I thought it was a very good promo. Just it didn't seem like something to close the show with. On AEW Dynamite, we had Mercedes Moné or Moné. They pronounced it two different ways. I don't know at this point. She opened the show, and she was really the only reason I cared about this episode of Dynamite. And she spoke about her near career-ending injury against Willow, and they played a video package to really introduce herself, just in case you don't know who she is. And she said that since she has unfinished business with Willow, anyone who gets in her business will have to deal with her. Alluding to Julia Hart and Sky Blue from the other week. And then the lights go out. Julia appears and Sky Blue shows up from behind. She gets dropped. Julia gets in, almost gets hit with the money maker. I don't know how to say it. They're pronouncing it two different ways. Let's just say money maker. And Sky Blue makes the save. And then they grab chairs. And then Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander ran down to back them off. And then the chairs, the lights go out. And when they come back on, they're gone. But Willow has a chair in her hand as if she's about to swing at Mercedes. And I don't think Mercedes' promo was good. Or great, I should say. It was okay. Most of it could have been said last week. Obviously, there was new information post the match, but they shouldn't have introduced the fact that she was going to be speaking again before that match took place. But we go on, and she she teased being part of that main event on Rampage. But the first match of Dynamite saw Okada pick up the victory over Eddie Kingston to become the Continental Champion. And I don't know if it was that opening segment or what, but this match felt really long and not in a good way. And I still don't understand that Continental Championship being defended by itself without the other two titles, because I thought it was a trio thing. I know they said it when they first announced it that it's going to be defended separately. I know Eddie has already defended it separately. I don't get it. But Okada cheated in this match, and that was the main focus. And then Pac came out to stare him down. So I have to assume, or I have to hope, that Pac takes the title from him. After that, Hook picked up the victory over Chris Jericho. Hook threw one suplex, and they paused the match for Chris Jericho to sell an injury. And you just have the referee there checking on him. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? How about get a doctor in there instead of just having it all on the ref? But Hook continues to drop Chris Jericho, suplex after suplex after suplex, completely dominating here. I don't think Chris Jericho should have been able to do the moves he was doing because Hook was so dominant. But also, booking Chris Jericho as an underdog babyface in this made zero sense to me. But I'm just very, very happy that Hook won. And then Jericho later on put Hook over and said he has a future. He's a future world champion. And then he has a proposition for Hook next week. I can't even fathom a guess as to what it is. After that, Will Ospreay came out, interviewed, kind of cut a promo, making fun of Bryan Danielson, and then challenged Shibata to a match next week where I thought it was going to lead to a match between the two of them on Rampage, but it's taking place next week on Dynamite. We had Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa pick up the victory over Toni Storm and Mariah May. The match, to me, was kind of messy. Luther, again, was allowed to get involved. And I thought for sure we were going to see Thunder Rosa be the one to eat the pin, not the one pinning the champion. She tagged herself in and ended up eventually getting that lucky sort of pin victory. Deonna Purrazzo was pissed off, but they get the win. So maybe it's going to lead to a triple threat or something. Hopefully this leads to Thunder Rosa being pushed again in that championship spotlight. I don't know what else they could possibly be doing here. After that, Swerve had an open challenge where he picked up the victory over the Butcher. And I was assuming we'd get like a big surprise opponent and not somebody who's in the company and certainly not someone who's not had a singles victory on TV since 2022. I could have done without this match. Swerve made Butcher tap out. Joe showed up afterwards when Swerve was cutting a promo on Samoa Joe. And then Don Callis interrupted and said Takeshita has the same amount of wins as Swerve, and he's undefeated. And then Swerve accepted a challenge, so we're going to see Takeshita versus Swerve next week. They just did this with Hangman and Swerve. I have the same amount of victories as you. We're in the same spot. The rankings, by the way, are no longer a thing. They got rid of them. They were last updated February, I believe. And clearly haven't followed anything with Okada. But I don't know if Swerve and Takeshita even have the same amount of victories, because when you go to their roster pages, they don't have the same amount there. So I don't know. And then the main event of Dynamite, also technically the opening contest of Rampage, saw Edge pick up the victory over Christian in an I Quit match to become the new TNT champion. Edge, I thought, had cool gear. It was kind of like the reverse color of his last match with Sheamus. And it was cool to hear the crowd singing his theme song well beyond the point of his theme song shutting off. And I liked the match, most of it at least. I thought they had some unique spots, like that Edge-O-Matic on the bridging ladder, the forward suplex onto the upside-down ladder, I thought was cool. But Edge got busted open in this. Shayna Wayne got involved later on. Christian broke out a barbed wire chair for a concerto. Edge moved out of the way. They both went back and forth teasing the use of that chair, but neither of them could use it. Edge used a hockey stick that was broken to do the Glasgow grin for a quick second. Then we saw Killswitch and Nick Wayne get involved. Matt Menard and Daniel Garcia ran down to brawl. Edge hit the Impaler onto that barbed wire chair to Killswitch. And then they cuffed everyone to the corners. Shayna ran off. And Edge brought out Spike, which I completely forgot about. And he smacked Christian downstairs with that, which I feel like that, based off my memory, that was not the absolute final of the match, but it eventually leads to Christian quitting. Not the best ending, but like I said, I enjoyed most of this match. And that was the start of Rampage. So if you were DVRing these shows, you're screwed. Because, especially Rampage, because Rampage wasn't even on the right network. So that altogether just did not DVR. And then from that, they go to a segment with the Bullet Club Gold poolside, where they made fun of Darby Allin. And it was really hard to hear the audio of this because it sounded like it was filmed from underwater. And then the Acclaimed got interviewed on the stage, or they cut a promo on the stage. Billy Gunn was not there. He was not cleared to be there after what happened last week. And they're pissed off at the Bullet Club Gold. This has to, I assume, lead to some sort of unification match with hopefully the Acclaimed winning. Although it seems more likely that Bullet Club Gold would win. After that, Best Friends picked up the victory over the Don Callis family to advance in that tournament. And after Edge versus Christian, this was just boring. I think Fletcher and Powerhouse should have won this match. I think this was a big miss. Then you had Shibata pick up the victory over Kevin Matthews. It was cool to see KM, but this wasn't necessary. And then Takeshita picked up the victory over Rocky Romero, which I felt like also wasn't necessary. I feel like the whole episode was just not needed. And then the main event, you had Julia Hart and Sky Blue pick up the victory over Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander in a street fight, which I think it's a huge disservice to everyone involved in this match to put this on the same card as Edge and Christian. In a very, very similar match type. Why, like, post Edge and Christian, why would anyone have stuck around to watch this show? There was nothing, like, grabbing you. They just saw a main event, pay-per-view-esque match. But stick around because Mercedes Moné might show up. And she didn't even show up. I really felt like she teased being there in that main event spot, and then that was it. That she didn't show up. So I thought that was very goofy. As far as the match goes, it was a good match. I think the four of them worked very well together. They put on different spots than what we saw from Edge and Christian, so I thought that was well done on their part. Julia Hart accidentally clocked Sky Blue with the railroad spike, which did not lead to anything. I thought that would have been like the ending because they were really running low on time. But that match continued. Sky Blue hit a code blue on the commentary table, which did not break. And I thought that was pretty cool to Willow Nightingale. Willow, I think, had the best spot of the night where of the Rampage episode. Well, of the supposed to be Rampage episode, not including Edge and Christian. She hit that Death Valley driver off the apron to Sky Blue through two of the tables. And then Chris Statlander missed the 450 splash and Julia Hart made her tap out. And I'm just waiting for Mercedes Moné. And then the copyright thing flashes on the screen. I was like, oh, she'll show up now. Never. Didn't happen. I don't understand that at all. But that's AEW from this week. Hey, Brandon, got any shout-outs?
I am Grover, and you're listening to Brandon's Shoutouts.
The first shout-out goes to Ricky Stenicki. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I actually want to watch it. It seems very, very funny.
It is John Cena's new movie on Amazon Prime. It also stars Zac Efron, Jermaine Fowler, and Andrew Santino. They're three best friends who made up another friend that allows them to get out of things, especially trouble when they were kids. And then their partners end up getting suspicious and finally wanting to meet him. Enter John Cena. And I thought it was a funny movie. It's kind of, it reminded me of like the chaos of Vacation Friends that John Cena was in, but different. William H. Macy is also in this movie, and I would definitely recommend it. I enjoyed it. The reviews aren't so much enjoying it as much, but I enjoyed it.
I'm surprised that the reviews don't like it. I mean, it looked like a really funny movie.
Yeah, it's just one of those comedy films. I feel like people are overcritical when they review movies and stuff.
Yeah, it looked hilarious.
Yeah. But my next shout out goes to Apples Never Fall, which is a mystery drama miniseries on Peacock based on a novel. It just came out last week, but I watched the whole season. It's 7 episodes. It stars Allison Brie, Jake Lacy, Annette Bening's in it, Sam Neill as well. And then Annette Bening's character ends up going missing, and her kids try to piece everything together to find her. And I saw an ad for this on TikTok, and like maybe last month or so, and I thought it looked interesting. And it came out, and I watched it. I enjoyed this as well. The ratings are pretty much like Ricky Stinicky, where they're being pretty harsh on it, I think.
Haters gonna hate.
Yeah, I don't get it. I thought it was an enjoyable series. The twist at the end was something that I feel like you could have seen coming, but
You're
not like 100% sure. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a whole thing. I don't think it's a big spoiler or anything. I don't think, unless you like instantly know what I'm talking about, I don't think.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks like me.
Yeah.
But my last shout out goes to Conan O'Brien Must Go, because we finally know more about this series that's going to be on Max. I think we've known about Conan doing something. I mean, even before Max, it was HBO Max for like 3 years or so. And then we found out this was going to be the actual show, I think like a year ago or so. And a trailer just dropped this week. It comes out April 18th. I'm super pumped for it. It's a spinoff of his podcast and a successor to Conan Without Borders, which was part of the Conan talk show where he would travel as specials and go to different places. And on this series, he'll be going to Norway, Thailand, Argentina, and Ireland and meeting up with fans that he interviewed on his podcast.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I think Conan really very much so knocks it out of the park when he does these travel shows. So I'm very much so pumped for that. But those are my shout outs. Now it's time for
our
That is right, our mark out moment of the week. I want to say something that I've been meaning to mention on the show for a while now, but now there's some sort of payoff at least, was that a few weeks ago, WWE Shop added a Halloween Havoc 1997 Rey Mysterio replica mask, and I randomly went on to WWE Shop on Friday and saw that they had a 31.6% off sale for Stone Cold Steve Austin 316. So I put the code in just to see how much the mask would be with that code. And when I saw the price, I was like, this doesn't make sense. There's no way this is 31.6% off. And then I noticed there was $30 in fan cash. So it's like, how the hell could I not buy it? It was basically like 60% off, if my math is correct on that.
Wow.
So I got the mask for like $28.
That's awesome.
Instead of what they sell it for 70. I don't think those masks are worth $70, but that's how much they sell it for. I think it is worth, to me at least, around 28. So I thought that was dope that I was able to get that for that. Do you have any markout moments?
A markout moment that I had was, I definitely marked out for that Nia Jax spot with Becky Lynch. Going through the table. I totally marked out for that spot during the matchup.
Well, speaking about Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
How about Matt Hardy doing a meet and greet?
Yeah, Matt Hardy marked out for Matt Hardy being there with the meet and greet.
It's definitely not something I thought we would see in 2024, but especially since he's currently employed by AEW. But I think it's cool to see. And like, yes, he's going to Monday Night Raw and fans are going to recognize him and he's not going to be mean to his fans.
Yeah. Also marked out for Blue Kane taking on Matt Cardona.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, Blue Kane. He's finally going to be getting his revenge on Kane. It's not the Kane, but he is getting revenge on a Kane.
I would love, I mean, we got Shayna Baszler announced for a GCW show. I would love if WWE somehow sent Glenn Jacobs to that show.
That would
imagine,
funny.
Could you imagine you have Matt Cardona taking on Blue Kane and all of a sudden the lights go out.
And then Kane actually shows up.
I think that would break the internet.
That would be hilarious.
That would break the internet.
That would be hilarious, but I totally would mark out for that taking place. But I did mark out for Blue Kane. But also, he's taking on Danhausen, too.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
I mean, Danhausen, I don't know where he disappeared to.
I think he got injured.
Yeah, but how is he going to be wrestling if he's injured?
He recovered?
I mean, obviously, if he's booked to wrestle, but back to that Shayna Baszler thing, I think that's really cool that...
Yeah, the Baszler stuff is awesome. Apparently, they've been in talks for a while, too.
Yeah, to have her part of Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that's huge.
And she's taking on Masha Slamovich. WWE versus TNA.
I mean, yeah, Impact Wrestling over there. Well, TNA, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool.
I agree.
So those are the markout moments of the week. Thank you so much for listening to Markin' Out, episode 685. You can follow us on Twitter at Markin' Out, at BTTG161 on all platforms. Chris Sweeney Dog, CM Sweeney 85, David PTDPT. Follow us on Instagram and YouTube. Subscribe at Markin' Out 11, Facebook.com/Markin' Out. Like us there. Buy some merch, prowrestlingtees.com/markinout, at markinout on TikTok. You can watch all of our TikTok videos. Give it a little like, maybe a bookmark or so. And of course, you can listen to the show at markinout.com, YouTube as well, Spotify Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and hopefully wherever else you'd like to listen to a podcast. And for myself, Chris, and Dave, we wish you the
best of luck in your future endeavors.
Have a fan.